The Quintessential Podcast is proud to announce that we have a new presenting sponsor, Axia Time. Axia Time is a really cool watch company focused on ultra-custom watches to commemorate life's greatest accomplishments. Watches whose styling and quality match the significance of the accomplishments they represent. Axia Time is also partnered with all the leading lacrosse organizations to create All-American timepieces for high school boys and girls and college men and women. Axia Time even creates timepieces for elite awards like the Tourton and Naismith. If you're interested in a high-quality, Swiss-made timepiece to commemorate a great accomplishment, you need to check out their designs at axiatime.com. That's axiatime.com. If you're celebrating a team achievement, like a state championship, national championship, or even world championship, you have to check out the timepieces they created for teams like Jesuit Dallas, the University of Maryland, and even the USA U21 World Champions. Welcome to the Quintessential Podcast, a mid-December edition. We are looking towards finals, which are stressful for student athletes, and the Christmas shopping season, which is stressful for our parents. Our guest this week is Matt Nunes, goaltender. He's a junior now at the University of Virginia. Matt, I struggle. Like, you're a junior already. Time is flying.
Yeah, I mean, time's went by super fast here. I remember the first day I showed up in Charlottesville, then all of a sudden I'm finishing up my fifth semester here on grounds, which has just went by super fast. But I mean, when it's going fast, that means it's going pretty well. So
yeah, it goes by super fast. You know, one thing that stood out during your recruiting and now that you're playing, and I've been down to the Woodlands, Texas, which is a suburb of Houston, is that you're like a non-hotbed player who's made it to the big time. And we're seeing that more and more. I want to start there in terms of advice you would offer young people who listen to this podcast, young boys, young girls, who maybe don't play in New York, Maryland, or a hotbed. What's most essential for them to A, get good enough, and then B, to get seen?
I mean, people always talk about trying to get recruited, but the biggest thing is just making sure your talent, or you just keep working hard. I mean, you have to put in the time and all the effort to be able to get in those spotlights. Then once you show up on the East Coast to play in those tournaments, I mean, it is filled with pressure, but you just got to perform in front of the right people. And then also having the right people in your corner, whether it's your high school coach or your people you play club for. I was super fortunate to play for Iron Horse and West Coast Stars, which, you know, Coach John Ozizzi, Coach Saran from Iron Horse. Those guys really helped put me in the right position to help get recruited.
I've been to Woodlands for a high school football game, I don't know, 15, 10 years ago, and I was blown away. They had a full-time staff of like 11 coaches. The facilities were better than many colleges. Were you involved in that football program? And if so, or if not, when did lacrosse become the pathway?
I did not play high school football. I started playing tackle football when I was 5 years old. And that's actually how I met my best friend, who's a starting inside linebacker at Wake Forest. So it's kind of crazy to see where everybody goes. But started playing football. I was from the time I was five all the way up through eighth grade. Got two concussions and just kind of felt like that wasn't going to be my pathway to kind of the next level. And then started playing lacrosse in first grade just as another sport to kind of do with football. Then I want to say around sixth to seventh grade, that's when lacrosse really took over. And kind of I saw that there might be a chance to take it farther than high school, say in eighth to ninth grade. And so that's kind of when I pursued lacrosse full time with starting in high school. So, yeah.
Your mom is a teacher, Robin?
Correct. She's a kindergarten teacher.
Was that in your school district or is that a different district?
So she actually teaches at the elementary school I went to. So our elementary school is K through fourth. And then once I graduated fourth grade, she started teaching at Sally K. Ride. So she worked at a private school up until then and then got into the public school district. And now she's been there for close to 15 years now.
Your dad, Chris, what's it like for them? You know, my daughter played goalie for the first time last year, and it was the longest 2 hours of my life watching her in that game. I was so stressed out. I never felt that way as a player. But what's it like for your parents? How do they handle it?
I for sure think the games were more stressful on my parents than it is on me. I know my dad likes to watch the game kind of by himself. He never played lacrosse, so he just kind of likes to sit away from everybody, just kind of take it all in while my mom's in with like all the other parents, kind of that where they're all kind of nervous and they all can have their own support system there. And then my sister watches the games with my mom. My sister actually works here at the university. She's an academic coordinator. So her and my mom get to watch the games together while my dad is usually on he's usually towards the scoreboard side at Klockner up on that hill. It's where he watches the game.
Yeah, it's interesting psychology. Like the mistakes hurt more. They're more obvious, I think. Everyone makes mistakes in the sport, but you miss a ground ball, no big deal. You miss a shot and there's a number up on the board. Like I never really fully grasped my mom's emotional investment in my games until I became that goalie parent.
Yeah, I mean, for my mom, she's watched enough lacrosse when she sees me let in a soft one, she knows that I'm pretty frustrated myself, but she also can feel she I don't want to say she feels bad for me, but she can feel kind of the pressure, I guess, and she takes a part in that. I mean, I guess a bunch of the goalies parents can relate to this. They say that once their kid starts playing goalie, they get a few more gray hairs. So that's what my mom always likes to say.
Take me to the here and now. What are you studying, and what's this next week or two like, in terms of wrapping up the semester?
Yeah, so I'm majoring in American politics with a minor in leadership through the McIntyre School of Commerce. So I'm pretty happy with that. So our final started on today is the 11th. Started last Wednesday or last Thursday. So that was maybe the 6th or the 7th is when they started up. And then my last final is this upcoming Thursday, either on the 14th or 15th. So it's just been pretty busy. Had two pretty big exams and two long papers, but it's a grind for sure. But I mean, no lacrosse right now makes it a little easier. Kind of gives you a little bit of time to just make sure you're getting your work in on your own while also having enough time to take care of the academic requirements that University of Virginia requires, which is just a super high level institution. But that's why you come to a school like this.
Yeah, I took a recruiting trip to Virginia in early September of my senior year. Went to a football game, never got in the, oh, we did go in the game actually. I didn't get to see campus during the day, which was one of the biggest mistakes in the history of recruiting trips, because it's an amazing campus. But let's spin things forward. So you guys will start practice in early January. You go home, you train on your own. Like, how do you approach the off time from December 14th to the first day of practice?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty hard time to just be away from the guys on the team. We all are super close with each other. And especially after the fall ball, we just went through going 5 to 6 times a week, getting after each other. So it's pretty hard to go home, but it's also a nice little break because our goal is to be playing on Memorial Day. And it's a long season, especially once you get into it. So it's making sure you take a break, but also you're making sure you're in the right physical and right mindset when you come back to grounds. For me, what it will look like is I'll try to lift probably 4 to 5 times a week, making sure I'm getting my running in, and then probably trying to see shots 2 to 3 times a week. That's something me and Coach Turner have talked about where I'm very used to going to see extra shots, but trying to pull that back a little bit because as you know, during the season, you see tons of rubber throughout the season. So it's trying to limit those numbers. So when the end of the season comes up, when we're playing that ACC slate at the end of the season, hopefully going to the ACC tournament, the NCAA tournament, you're fresh, you're ready to go, and you're not tired of seeing rubber lacrosse balls coming at you.
Yeah, that's such a huge point, because I felt that at the high school level, like, you couldn't get enough reps. And then as a freshman in college, you could not get enough reps because you're seeing new speeds, you're seeing a higher level of shooter. Later on in my career, I felt that sometimes doing less, but doing it really intensely, was better than doing more. Like, the more time, sometimes you're in the goal, you're like, what am I doing here? I'm a zombie. I'm just going through the motions. So finding that middle ground. And I, like, people talk about goofy goalie drills, but I was against goalie drills when I was your age. Like, I was like, these don't really help me. But kind of looking back at it now, I'm almost of the opinion that they are helpful, because anything you can do to get better without seeing extra shots as a junior or senior that will help you with your technique,
your explosiveness, your hand-eye coordination is beneficial. Where do you stand on the extras that come with the position? Some people think they're a waste of time. Other people think they're extremely worthwhile.
I would say for sure, I think some can be a little bit of a far reach, but I'm actually a pretty big believer in just doing the hand-eye stuff, the latter. I mean, a big thing goes back to Doug Sarant, who you might even know. He's a kind of a local goalie guru back where I'm from. So we did a lot of that stuff growing up and kind of going back to just making sure it's a quality amount of reps, just going to shoot with guys like Griffin Schutz, Connor Schellenberger. We used to be out there for an hour and 15, hour and 20, where that was just too long. Now we're down at the field. We'll be there for 30 to 45 minutes, and it's really intense, but it's 45 minutes of good work. And then if you can supplement that with maybe a couple hand-eye drills or getting down there before the shooters come down, doing just a little ladder just to kind of supplement for a little bit more time. But when I'm in the goal, I try to keep it pretty short and concise now, because it's like I want to go full speed for 30 to 40 minutes, making sure I'm not building any bad habits while I'm also getting my reps in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, actually, I completely agree with that. You're in great hands with Kip Turner. You know, obviously always working on your outlet passing, your play around the goal, the ground ball plays, and then getting better as a defensive leader, getting better as a coordinator of the guys around you. We look back at last year. You guys played 17 games, 13 wins, made it to the championship weekend in an epic game against Notre Dame, an overtime loss. The one thing, and when I look at your slate from last year, you played in a lot of big games. You beat Notre Dame. You had epic games against Duke. You won a playoff game against Richmond and then against Georgetown. When you mention it's a long season, but with your schedule, like you're in the fire. How do you deal with that emotionally?
I mean, a lot of credit goes to Coach Turner and then also the other goalies in our goalie room. I've been super lucky with the support I've gotten here at University of Virginia, between Dave Rozelle, Kyle Morris, Miles Thompson. Those guys are always just a support system for me. But another thing that we've talked about with Coach Turner is that when you come to the University of Virginia, you want to play the top talent. That's what attracts so many people to this spot. So when you show up to the University of Virginia, you want to play all those top schools. And when you play all those top schools week in, week out, there's no big game. I mean, every game's a big game. If you look at our schedule last year, every single weekend you're showing up and it's a top 20 matchup, no matter if we're playing in conference, out of conference. And then obviously those in-conference games kind of mean a little bit more. And it's just a little different speed. I mean, ACC lacrosse, I mean, that's part of the recruiting pitch, is that you get to play against the best. You get to play against the Chris Kavanaughs, Brendan O'Neill's, guys like that. So
I got a list of questions. Let's start it out with what did you accomplish this fall?
I mean, this fall we were working on just fine tuning my game, like looking at making sure there's no wasted movement, also the presence and the goal to make sure, just to make myself look bigger in the goal. And we're also just working on just kind of the communication throughout the defense, trying to lead them a little bit better than I've done in the past, just with the guys graduating. Kate Sostad did a great job the past few years, Grayson Saudi. So a lot of credit goes to that. But like you said in the beginning, 2 years have went by. I'm a third year now, so it's kind of my time to take over and use my voice a little bit more.
Virginia has a new assistant coach in Kevin Cassis, comes over as a head coach of Lehigh. He's going to be more involved with the offense. But at Lehigh, he has produced really good goaltenders. What impact has Coach Cassis had on you during the fall?
I mean, Coach Cassis has been an awesome addition to the coaching staff. He brings a new energy to the program. He also just brings a new set of eyes that hasn't been here for the past 2 years. So he's been able to kind of help me out and just seeing the game differently. He'll point out stuff that maybe kind of flies under the radar, which has been super helpful. But the biggest thing is he brings the energy every single day, which is super helpful to our team. And it's also just a new voice and new set of eyes, like I said earlier.
Yeah, new eyes and new ideas are beneficial for all our organizations, even ones like yourself, as you guys have been humming. Transfers and freshmen, like never before have lacrosse players have to deal with. It's hard enough dealing with a new group of freshmen, but then you got these transfers coming in as well. So there's a lot of assimilation that goes on. What's that like? How do you attack that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we brought in about 15 new guys to the program We brought in two walk-on goalies who've been an awesome addition to the program, Colin Hook and Bennett Yu. They've been an awesome, just kind of eyes open, ears open, kind of taking everything in. And then our first year class is super talented, obviously led by guys like McKay Millen, but some guys under the radar would be like Eli Petty, Cole Weber, who've done a great job on the defensive end, learning all the new systems, putting in the effort. Other guys like Will Erdman, learning kind of a new position, learning how to play defense and offense here. Then the transfers, obviously we brought in a good amount of transfer faceoff guys, which will be beneficial, just building up kind of that stable of guys, because not every program is lucky to have a guy like Pete LaSalle for the past few years like we've had. So it's just building that up to make sure that we have depth at that position, because as you know, that position takes a lot of wear and tear over the season. So it's been good. I mean, just building those guys into the program, showing them the way that we do things here at the Virginia Way, holding each other to a standard that we hold each other. And then also they brought in, just like Coach Cassis, they brought in a new energy, new ideas, new faces. So it's been good.
This next question is a little off the radar. It's about campus. When I was at Hopkins, there were demonstrations, peaceful and some that were non-peaceful. Hopkins was being urged to divest in some of their money was tied up in investments into South Africa, and that was became a hot button topic of the era. Right now, we've got this Middle East conflict going on, and we've seen the Ivy campuses. What's the vibe on campus? You know, campus can be an incubator for ideas. It can be really the start of thought and discussion. Like, is there any sense on campus from a worldview that things are in a good or bad place?
I mean, there's obviously protests just like there are at every state university, but say the least, we kind of stay kind of with the men on the team. We are all together through this whole thing and supporting each other through the tough times, just like the world is ever changing, grounds is ever changing here, but we're just supporting each other here as a team. And if anybody kind of needs support, everybody on the team is here for them.
What book did Coach have you guys read this fall?
Which book? We read Boys in the Boat. It was about the Washington rowing team, kind of that the during the Depression, through the Cold War, or not the Cold War, during World War II, just throughout that time period.
Yeah, I got it on my shelf up here. It's one of my favorite books. The fact that book has not been made into a movie yet is just crazy. Or maybe it was and I missed it. But
they're actually making a movie over Christmas.
Oh, they are.
Winter Break. It actually comes out pretty soon.
Okay, good. Because that book, as a historical book, like to realize what life was like in the Pacific Northwest, just the fabric of those guys then rowing at the University of Washington and where they came from, whether they were loggers or farmers or fishermen or businessmen in the city of Seattle, a fascinating book. And the synchronicity of their job to row and how if they were off by just a hair, that would make such a big difference. That is a great book. One of my favorites, actually. Another big picture question that doesn't exactly involve men's lacrosse, but it will involve the women's lacrosse. ACC realignment. The ACC adding Cal, Stanford, and SMU, Dallas, Texas, you know, not exactly Houston. But what do you think it's going to be like for these women and some of these and some of the men's programs to hop on flights to San Francisco, to Dallas? How are they going to deal with that?
I mean, I think it's a little wild. I mean, I'm a huge college football fan, so understanding it from the college football perspective, you do understand why they do that. But I don't think a lot of people realize that the women's lacrosse team, they don't charter their flights to the West Coast like our football team is fortunate enough to do. So these girls are going to have to drive 2 hours to Dulles Airport, maybe make a connection flight through Denver, and then fly out to the Bay Area, Stanford and Cal, and then they'll have to fly back, and they might have to play Duke on that Sunday, and that's just an extra stress. When you're on those as people know, when you're on those planes, there's not tons of room, you're not getting high-quality sleep. It's obviously an academic stressor. So as an Olympic sport, looking at it from an Olympic sport type of view, I think it's super challenging because just that all the extra requirements that go into, and also these ladies, all these other athletes playing, who play multiple games in a week, that also just puts them probably at a higher chance of injury and just puts them at more risk because of kind of the way you have to travel financially to make this all make sense. So it's just super hard. I mean, it's super hard, but also at the same time, this conference expansion, you look at the Big 12, they added a few teams that have women's lacrosse. So maybe that helps the game grow into those schools. So there's two ways to look at it, but just looking at it from a student athlete's perspective, I think it adds a lot of stress on to us, and just especially just through the way that travel is done.
Clemson added women's lacrosse. I would love to see some SEC schools add, and maybe now some Big 12 schools, as you mentioned, add women's lacrosse. And I agree with you. I think this is going to be very taxing on those student athletes. I think this is going to be very, very hard. Mindset, a goalie's mindset. Take me day before, day pre-game-ish. What's going through your mind, let's say, at the breakfast of on a game day on a Saturday?
If we play here at Klockner, I usually just try to walk over to breakfast, over to training grounds where our locker room is. Even when we have like a noon or a 1 o'clock face off, there's a lot of time before the game. There's a lot of time to overthink stuff. So the biggest thing is just trying to stay loose. I mean, watching other games beforehand, just kicking it with the guys in the locker room. Then probably, I want to say 90 minutes to 2 hours before the games, kind of when I start locking in, go through my like little pregame routine, little jump rope, juggle, loosen up my hips, and then head up to Klockner probably an hour before the game, just kind of throw the cleats on, throw the ball around. And then once we go out, probably about 50 to 45 minutes before the opening face-off, that's kind of when everything gets super dialed in, where it's just, you're just focusing on the ball and nothing else really matters.
Music, stretching, that it seems feels like that walk is significant in getting game ready.
Yeah, so we walk up from our locker room to Klockner, which is not very far. It's probably about a 10-minute walk. And you kind of walk by the parents, you get to see everybody. And then once you walk by the parents, you enter through the gates of Klockner. That's when you really kind of dial in. You usually see the other team. You see some of the guys on our team getting some extra shots in before warm-ups. And that's kind of when it all hits you, where it's like, all right, like, here we go.
Do you find – I always struggled with first shot of the game, first shot of the third quarter. And if I made those saves, then I was like, okay, today's going to be okay. I probably put more significance on them, but it was hard for me to relax until I made that first save. How do you deal with starting off on the right foot?
I mean, obviously making the first save kind of makes everything easier just as a goal, like, as you know, as a goal. But even if that first one, it's just kind of seeing that ball move around, just that first possession, seeing the ball move around the outside, just kind of relaxing, settling in, because it's just like, everything will be fine. I mean, I go against, I think, the best team in the country every single day in practice. You see shots from guys like Connor, Griffin Schutz, just those super high level players that's like, it's just like practice. Like, I don't freak out during practice. I'm not going to freak out during the game.
Yeah, eventually you get, like, if the goal is good, you kind of nod your head and you're like, hey, nice shot. Like, guys are going to make shots. If the goal was on you, that's when I think that's the worrying stage. From the mental aspect. What are the challenging venues that you see? Is there anything in terms of playing in certain places, playing on certain surfaces, playing in different environments that challenge you?
I mean, obviously those big football stadiums are sometimes tough when they're just super empty. I mean, playing in Ohio State at the Shoe was obviously a great experience, but I mean, that ball is pretty, the ball's white, the stadium's pretty gray, so it kind of blends in a little bit, and especially with those empty seats. But I really enjoy playing in kind of like those smaller venues. One of my favorite places outside of obviously Klockner is my favorite spot to play. But one of my favorite venues outside of Klockner was when we went to Brown for the first round of the NCAAs
Oh, yeah.
my first year, where it was about, I think it was 3,200 people packed into that stadium at Brown, made for an awesome environment, made seeing the ball pretty, I don't want to say.
It was a night game too, wasn't it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So it was a night game at, so just kind of like the smaller, more intimate venues where you can fill it out are, I think, more beneficial for the game. And also I think it's just easier to kind of see the ball. Like sometimes when you go to the dome with the bright lighting off the seats can make it difficult. But at the end of the day, it's all about just finding the ball out of the shooter's sticks. So, I mean, just having that focus no matter where you're playing makes a difference.
Something about those big empty stadiums that kind of sucks the energy out. Do you play in the Audi game, correct? In Audi Field in D.C.?
Yes, sir.
2 years ago? What was that like?
I mean, obviously the game did not go our way. But I thought playing there was awesome. I think there was about 10,000 people just kind of packed in. And I think that's what the goal for lacrosse should be. We should be getting 10 to 12,000 fans packed into the stadiums and making it a super lively environment. I actually talked to Anthony DeMeo, who's now the head coach at the Woodlands High School where I went, and he played in that game, and he was on probably the better end of the way that game ended with Maryland winning. And he just talked about, and we've talked about it before, and it was really cool when the whole stadium was kind of, I guess, behind them, but it wasn't as cool for us. But just kind of seeing that energy and kind of make that atmosphere was really unique for our sport.
That was a big time environment. Maryland's midfielders played great that day, but that's a feel of what it's like to play a pro game. That was very much like a PLL venue. Do you watch the pro league? And if so, what are your biggest takeaways from the goalie position?
Yeah. I mean, I watch the pro game as often as I can. I mean, all the goalies are super talented, and I think they have a pretty difficult job. I mean, that 2-point arc being moved into, I want to say, what is it? There might be 13 yards now. I mean, with the best shooters in the world, that ball gets on top of you pretty fast. I mean, guys like Blaze Reardon is obviously incredible, but I really have enjoyed watching Brett Dobson from the Archers play. Just the way that he plays, he looks super relaxed. He's not as much of a flopper, kind of just really smooth and not much wasted movement. Obviously with Blaze, just how relaxed he is. It's kind of like, those are the two guys who I've really enjoyed watching.
You know, Dobson's style, body type, athletic ability, similar to yours. You know, that's a good comparison. That's a guy you should be watching. He made a big step from year one to year two. He basically was a backup his first year, shared some time, and he last year jumped on the scene and solid as a rock. And I got to see him out in San Diego during the World Championships playing for Team Canada. And again, I think he combines – you know, Matt, I think he combines like decent size, like yourself, really athletic, but his positioning is it's right on. It's aggressive, but it's right on.
Yeah, I mean, just the way that he's aggressive, and I mean that. Then I feel like when I watch him, it's just not much wasted movement, which was a big focus kind of this fall of just fine tuning my game. And by watching him, you can see that he's able to do it at the highest level when the ball is coming at you, even just that half second faster than it is coming at me. And just the way that he's so relaxed and kind of, when you play that type of way, it proceeds of confidence. And that's something I want to continue to work on.
Hey, last thing I want to ask you about team culture, team building, becoming one. Obviously the fall is when you lay the groundwork, you lay the foundation for that. You guys read in your books. I'm sure there's a lot of meetings that goes on. There's getting to know the new guys, about what, a third of your team, maybe a little less than that, are new faces between freshmen and transfers. What's important now that you've been through this 2 years? What do you think is important in terms of culture and team building?
I mean, at the end of the day, it takes all – what, we have 48 guys on our roster. It takes all 48 guys to win a national championship. You need every single guy to be bought in. And it starts with the leadership at the top, whether it's the older guys or just guys who speak up and are in a position to lead, to the guys who are at the end of the bench. I mean, the guys who are on the scout team really help dictate how the game goes, between how people give us a scout look in practice, to the guys playing. So a lot of the credit on game day goes to a handful of guys, when it's really the scout team who's really helped throughout the whole process, and then just kind of building upon that team aspect, just reading books. And it all starts with leadership. Leadership from either Connor, myself, Cole, the captains, kind of speaking up to the guys who don't play as much, just communicating and being open and honest. And that's kind of where the whole team starts with, is just being open with each other about what our goal is and how we can do it together as a team.
It takes everybody. Yeah, that's such a great statement, because, you know, the two championship games that I played in, I thought they were won by roster spots 14 through 21-ish. You know, because good on good a lot of times neutralizes each other. Your good guy plays great, their great guy plays great. But at the end of the day, what do you get from roster spot 14 through 22? Your third shorty, your second pole, your backup faceoff guy, your extra man specialist. Like, those guys typically make a huge difference when it's elite against elite.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just building that depth. We're super lucky to have super talented guys come in year in, year out, as we've seen in our first year class, but just continue to build that depth. So when it's that time for the third shorty to go in the game or the second faceoff guy to go in the game, that everyone's ready to go. And I think that's built through just the fall practices, the grind that we go through, the sacrifice that we give up, to the weekends that we give up of being a normal college student here, of making sure we have Sunday practice, making sure you're fresh and you're ready to go, so we get the most out of those 2 hours on the Sunday. I mean, throughout that sacrifice, that's how you build up those roster spots 14 through 21, 21 through 28, or even the back end of the roster, making sure that that weakest guy feels that he's as a part of the team as Connor Schellenberger, and is that he's as important, because that guy makes a difference for the number one pole, the number two pole on scout.
Do I remember correctly, last thing, the Woodlands, dark green and red school colors?
Yeah, forest green and red.
That's like Christmas colors, man. It must be amazing going back there for Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, it's Christmas colors all the time. I mean, I got tons of green and red in my closet all the time up here. So
You're dressed like an elf all year round.
Yep. It's not too bad of a color scheme. So
no, I like it. Great place. Matt, enjoy your holiday. I appreciate your time. Good luck on your last couple finals and your papers. Appreciate the talk. Be well, and best to all the Cavaliers.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's it for this week's episode of the Quintessential Podcast. Thank you to our guests. Thanks to our technical director, Dr. Nick Z. I want to thank you for listening. And of course, thanks to our sponsor, Axia Time. A watch. What a better gift than a ring. I've got a championship ring. It's collecting dust in a box. I wear watches all the time. Thank you, Axia Time. It's axiatime.com. And we'll see you next week.